Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. This is Nate Klarfeld from Blog Talk Radio. Tonight, my guest is Joseph Dallin, the author of Perfect, The Journey of a Gay Mormon. Joseph grew up in Orem, Utah, in the center of Mormon life, and became what was called the perfect Mormon. He was a missionary. He followed the church, and at age 23, he had his major moment and came out of the closet as a openly gay Mormon. I want to say hello to Joe. Hello, how are you, Joe, tonight in Hawaii?
Aloha, I'm well. How are you?
Yes. Joe, tell me how the book came into being.
Well, actually, my biggest inspiration came from Carolyn Pearson, who is a Mormon author who's been very supportive of the gay community for decades.
Uh-huh.
She had a husband who was gay, came out, but they remained friends, and she wrote about their story in a book called Goodbye, I Love You, which became a New York Times bestseller.
Right.
So she was writing, a few years ago, she was writing another book called No More Goodbyes, just kind of about stories, you know, personal stories and the Mormon church's approach and role in gay life. And so she had heard about me, and she wanted me to contribute to the book.
Uh-huh.
So I started writing, and I provided a chapter in her book, and I just kept writing until I had one of my own.
Uh-huh.
So it was kind of a process of a few years, and I self-published the book about a year and a half ago.
Okay. And the book is actually filled with a lot of your own writings, both to your fiancé and your family and your second diary. Tell us about the two diaries that you kept in the book.
Yeah, that was really, I think that was such a good illustration of how my life was. When I was a Mormon missionary, I kept two separate journals. And one of them was, you know, filled with faith-promoting stories and how wonderful life was and you know, the kind of quasi-miracle things that were happening. And I kind of thought I would read that journal to my children, to my family as time went on. But I also kept another journal, a second journal,
mm-hmm.
where I recorded how I really felt. I recorded the anguish that I was going through, the doubts that I had, you know, and all of that. I never admitted even in my journal that I was gay, but that was what it was really about.
Right.
And it was very different, you know. And one, I was kind of funny when I was writing the book, going back to the journals and comparing entries, just maybe even on the same day,
uh-huh.
how different it was. And you know, that's kind of where I came up with the title of the book, Perfect, because I think, you know, we're really, as Mormons, we're expected to let our light shine, we're expected to be the good examples, and you really kind of are pressured to put forth this appearance of perfection, you know, even though you're not perfect.
Right.
You want other people, you want to believe that you can become like God. You want other people to believe that that's also a possibility. So, but you know, sometimes it presents an awful lot of conflict, trying to make yourself seem that righteous, that perfect, when, you know, all of us have struggles.
Right, everyone has struggles.
Yeah.
You, I've read the book more than once, and you're the real deal. I mean, I very rarely say that to people in people of faith. You really believe, both present and past tense, that, you know, there is a God and salvation and redemption and forgiveness. And I was just kind of tingly over that. I'm going to read a little passage for our guests tonight on air. From your personal journal.
Okay.
It's the one I chose. It's what you get to be when you get the host. You get to choose things. It is from your personal journal. As you said, you never really mentioned until much, much later in the book that you are gay. And it says, "My life, as all others have seen it, has been a facade. I have hidden inside a self-constructed shell as long as I can remember. I've often thought about what the reaction would be if I emerged from that shell. I believe that my parents would many times be better off if I had died. Many tears would be shed, yes, but the myriads more, much more bitter, would be shed at the other scenario. How would they able to face me, look me in the eye, to speak with me? Our relationship as it now stands would shatter. Only broken, obscure fragments would remain. Obviously, you're worried about what other people would think rather than how you feel about yourself, which is very common in journeys of whether it's self-awareness, self-esteem, whatever. How did you feel when you wrote that episode?
When I wrote it originally, you mean, or when I was...
Yes, when you wrote it originally, if you remember back that far. It can't be that far. You're not that old.
Yeah, I guess it was 14 years ago or so. I mean, I remember the feeling of desperation. I just felt so completely stuck. You know, I couldn't really wrap my head around an existence where I kept that secret. It just felt so unsustainable. And yet I didn't feel like I was at all free to share who I really was. I just, you know, it seemed like the world would have just come crashing down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was interesting. It actually felt to me like it would be a sin to even admit who I was, even though I had never acted on my homosexuality. I had never broken away from the church's rules. Even to just admit that felt like it would be sin, because it would be shaking the foundation of belief, you know, that my family had, that where I stood in the relationship with them. And
The Mormon Church seems to me, and the more, as I said, I grew up in Kansas City for 30 years around devout and not so devout Mormons. I was actually graduated my public college at the temple in Independence. It was used as a public private type place, and the Mormon Church was had a very interesting relationship with the public there. What always seemed to impress me was how encompassing and how totally enveloping the Mormon Church was onto the lives of these young people. Could you elaborate on that?
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, I kind of, in trying to explain my upbringing to other people, you know, that's probably one of the most difficult things to get across, is you just, there is no division between the rest of life and religion. Everything that you do from the time you're born and, you know, when you get married, when you have a family, you know, working, all of these things aren't just things that you do that are separate from the religion that you practice on Sunday. You know, getting married is a commandment from God. Having children is a commandment from God. Being productive in society and being part of, you know, contributing to the community around you, that's all a commandment from God.
Mm-hmm.
And there really is no separation at all. So to even try to kind of like pick and choose which parts of the culture I could, at that time, I could have accepted and then let other things go, it just didn't even seem like a possibility to me. Everything was so cut and dried. Everything was so all or nothing,
mm-hmm.
that to admit that I was gay meant, you know, not only was I stepping away from the faith, but I was stepping completely away from the culture, from the family, from the expectations of neighbors. And I mean, you name it. It was all interwoven.
And something that our readers, our listeners and your readers probably didn't realize till they read the book was that in Utah, I believe it's in the entire state of Utah, and correct me if I'm wrong, that next to every public school there is a Mormon school. Could you tell us about that?
As far as I know, yeah, every public school has a seminary building, is what they call it, attached to it, and during your high school years, you can, during the school day, you can schedule a release time, is what they call it, but you know, you actually have to attend the seminary class. So, you know, you might have English first period and math second period, and you'll have seminary third period and physical education fourth period. So, it's, you know, even that, even though, you know, technically they have to separate the church buildings from the public building, they still, you know, they still do practice that. And so it seems almost seamless. I mean, the door from our public high school to the seminary building was maybe, you know, 15 feet away from each other.
Oh, my God, so I didn't, like, they're that close. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Well, that, they're not. Yeah, they're not always that close. And I think, actually, there was a law passed later that required there had to be so many yards between the seminary building and the public schools. But ours was an older school, so it was grandfathered in. But, yeah, I mean, it just didn't even feel like there was any separation from that. And one of the interesting things was to graduate, you were counted on your attendance even in seminary. So if you signed up for release time and then you just sloughed your seminary classes, you would not be able to graduate from your public high school without making that up.
So there was no separation of church and state as far as curriculum, as far as your credits.
Yeah, well, the grades, the letter grades in seminary were not counted into your GPA, but you had what they called, and this was when I was in high school, I'm not sure if it's still the same way, but you also had a citizenship grade, which was basically pass or fail, if I remember right. And if you weren't attending your seminary classes, the seminary would submit to your high school a failing citizenship grade, and therefore you wouldn't be able to graduate from high school without making that up somehow.
So what?
Yeah, I mean, the separation of church and state in Utah has at least traditionally been pretty gray.
I think it's less than gray. I think it's kind of like not there.
Yeah.
So what happened if you were Jewish and lived in Salt Lake City?
Well, I actually had a good friend in high school who was Presbyterian, and she wanted to have a period off to do her own thing. And they actually wouldn't let her, and she ended up graduating with extra credits than she actually needed to graduate because she still had to attend school the full day. You know, she would just have to take a different class. So they did not make an exception for her.
That's
it was either seminary or nothing.
And people don't question that.
I never heard any controversy when I was in high school, but I also, you know, I was in a community where probably 90-95% of the population was Mormon.
Right.
So there weren't a lot of voices speaking anyway.
Right. Well, there were voices, but they were speaking in your language.
Yeah, exactly.
As I said earlier, I labeled you as the real deal, as a real believer. I read your book, and I've read between the lines of your book, and you actually, as I said, have a very strong belief in God and most of the tenets of the Mormon Church. If like in 1978 when they lifted the ban on African American priesthood, if tomorrow the Mormon Church had a revelation, oh my goodness, gays are okay, would you go back to the Mormon Church?
Well, actually, you know, my beliefs have changed quite a bit since exiting the Mormon Church. And even before I left, I was questioning other things other than just the gay issue.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, there are a lot of, without going into a lot of detail, there's quite a bit within the Mormon Church that I don't espouse anymore. So, no, I wouldn't go back. I think my beliefs are way too broad to fit in any religion. In fact, you know, probably more than anything in the last 10 years I've been studying Buddhism, but I still don't even really consider myself Buddhist.
Uh-huh. Well,
I'm sorry,
go ahead. I think you could be a Buddhist and a Jew and a Buddhist and a Christian. I don't think they're one of those.
That is true. Yeah, that is absolutely true.
Because I've studied Buddhism and I've recently come back to Judaism, which is kind of my partner calls it a yo-yo effect. I married a lovely man who was a Methodist and then a Baptist, and now he has converted to Judaism, complete with bar mitzvah and recircumcision and a trip to Israel. So where I'm actually more observant today with my formerly Gentile boyfriend than I was when I was living in the Orthodox, very tight-knit Orthodox community in my former life. which is a whole. I didn't mention this to the audience, but we're of kindred souls. I grew up in the Black Hat Orthodox, small Orthodox community in the Midwest. My father was a kosher butcher. Talk about some strange, you know, rules about eating. It makes you know, some of the other religions look, you know, kind of normal. And you know, we talked about a little bit about, you know, the sacred underwear. Jewish boys wear tzitzit or undergarments with fringes under their shirts, and the little fringes hang out. I know many people who have been in Orthodox Jewish neighborhoods have seen them. I wore one through early years of high school before I broke away. And so to me, none of these rituals seem that bizarre, except the devotion. I find the Mormon church extracts and is very successful with this devotion, with the 2-year missionaries, with the terribly austere life you lead, with the difficult task of going out and converting people. Tell us about your incredibly successful missionary work in Eastern Texas.
Well, it was quite a 2 years. I think I probably, you know, they always say that a missionary learns more in 2 years than any time in their life. And actually, in a lot of ways, that was very true. I mean, for me, it was really the first time I'd spent any real time outside of Utah other than just, you know, family vacations. And even though it was just Southeast Texas, it was a big culture shock.
Yeah.
But, I took it very seriously. And ironically, I think, you know, I probably took it so seriously because of the fact that I was gay.
Right.
At that time in my life, I really thought that being gay was kind of like, for me, it was a spiritual test. You know, I hadn't even considered that it was genetic or that it had any kind of, you know, any other cause. I just kind of felt like this was my test from God. So when I was on my mission, I thought this is my chance to really prove my worthiness of normal heterosexual feelings. And, you know, that probably had a lot to do with the fact that I worked as hard as I did and really took it very seriously.
Right.
And, ended up having quite a bit of success bringing people into the church. And,
good. You got a lot of good baptisms. I read the book.
Yeah. Yeah, quite a few, actually.
And they kept you there longer than a normal tenure, I believe. I didn't quite understand it, but you were asked to stay on longer in this area because you were doing so great.
Yeah, what they usually do when they send you to a mission is kind of like this geographical boundary encompassing all these different areas, these different cities and areas. And usually they transfer you from one area to another every, you know, 4 to 6 months or something. Sometimes it's a little less, sometimes it's a little bit more. But I was in one area, and I just got to know the members very well, and I made a lot of contacts, and we were baptizing a lot. So I actually ended up spending 13 months in just one spot, which
wow.
is kind
so
of unheard
more
of.
Than half, more than half your your tenure.
Yeah.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, exactly.
We talk. Your book has a lot of talk about your family. I'm going to read a quote that I would say 99% of all young gay men that sit down with their parents sometime in their early 20s or 30s have. And you have a few sentences in there that were just. Though I have absolutely nothing in common with your family. It was exactly the feeling and the response that I got from my family, which is totally odd. I'm going to go ahead and read from it right now. Time itself whirred and buzzed in my eardrums. It was like watching two cars about to collide. Every fiber of muscle in my body contracted, forcing the words from my lips. I'm gay. I couldn't look anywhere but down. A moment passed. I think I might have been shocked to realize that the time was still moving, that the universe hadn't disintegrated with the explosiveness of those long, protected words. I slowly became aware of my mom patting my hand, the faint echo of the television downstairs, and the palpable silence in the room. Above us, swish, swish, swish of the ceiling fan seemed to be all that was holding the room together. That little moment, that little microsecond moment that you found after saying the word "I'm gay" was amazing. That really did capture my moment when I said the words to my parents that I'm gay. I felt that time had stood still, and then I realized it hadn't stood still. That things were going on, that ceiling fans were turning, that people were very quiet, that I could only look down at the floor. That must be like a learned response that we must have. And, you know, of course, your mother's response was, you know, "I'd wondered," and your dad's response was that he didn't believe it, which is similar to many people's responses, because they don't have time to really get used to it. And I don't know that they knew it was coming. Did you think your parents knew it was coming when you told them you were gay?
You know, I guess I really didn't. I didn't know, but I didn't think they knew. It was interesting. I think I mentioned in the book before that it almost felt scarier to think that they already knew.
Uh-huh.
You know, maybe because I had invested so much in keeping the secret,
right,
that the idea that they had been able to see through that secret was even scarier.
Right.
But I remember, you know, when I actually told them, I knew nothing would ever be the same. And it actually was probably one of the biggest turning points in my life was,
right,
when I actually told.
Right. I think every gay man has that. I can say that is a major life cycle event. You're young. You'll have other life cycle events. You'll get married. You'll do all sorts of things. You'll have children. Those will outshine that. Trust me. I'm 61 years old. My spouse and I have 2 children and 2 grandchildren. My same-sex husband, excuse me. I don't know what to wait. I jump between spouse, partner, and same-sex husband just to make it clear to people.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what to, until we have gay marriage, I'm not sure what to do with this. I'm going to ask you a question, and it's kind of probably on a lot of people's minds after seeing the title of the book and your lovely picture of you as a missionary on the cover that I've blasted all over creation the last 48 hours. why do you think there are other religions that don't accept gays very, very warmly. Why do you think there's been so much focus on gays and Mormons lately in the last few years? There's been a hit movie, Latter Days. Of course, the Tony winning Broadway show, Book of Mormon. We have Stephen Fales' Confessions of a Gay Mormon, I believe is a one-man show. They all seem to, of all the dichotomies in Mormon life, whether it's polygamy, whether it was racism until 30 years ago, why do you think the gay issue has come forth as the problem with the Mormon Church?
Well, I could answer that question two ways, I guess. I mean, internally, I think it's one of the big unanswered questions. You know, within the church, the gay membership, the gay youth within the church, you know, it's one of those areas where you just can't really get any clear answers.
Right.
You know, and the church is kind of, even though they're still opposed to it, and there's no question about that, their approach to homosexuality has changed. You know, in the past, there were things like reparative therapy, there was shock therapy
right,
and stuff that happening at BYU.
Right.
Some of the church leaders equated homosexuality with murder and
uh-huh,
and abortion, prostitution. I mean,
correct.
You know, and they're a little softer these days, at least for the most part. There still are some leaders that are kind of battle axes about it, I guess. But you know, there's really no place for a person who is homosexual to feel like they're a full member of the church. There's
right,
no appropriate place for them. So, for, you know, internally, there's always this struggle. Externally, also, there's been a lot of, you know, the Mormon Church has gotten a lot of attention, you know, especially with the gay issue,
right.
I think because of politics, because the church has been so involved with gay marriage politically. Yep. They got very involved with Prop 8 in California, of course.
Oh, my God.
Estimates are anywhere from like 50 to 77% of the funding for Prop 8 came from Mormons.
That's
even though Mormonism, you know, Mormons make up something like 2% of the population of California.
Right, right.
So, you know, ever since they started getting involved with the gay marriage issue in Hawaii more than 10 years
right.
ago, I think they've shown the spotlight on themselves.
Right, right. Thank you. I have a theory that it may. I'm only going to ask this because you were formerly associated with the Mormon Church. The Mormon Church has always had a PR problem with Catholicism and Episcopalianism, as far as it, some people consider it not as a real religion. Do you think that when they stepped forward with this incredible amount of cash and this incredible amount of manpower for Prop 8 and for the Hawaii issue, do you think it was not just to get the thing overturned, but to also kind of forge a odd bedfellows between the Catholic Church and the Mormon Church?
Absolutely. I definitely think that's the case. I mean, ever since, you know, the issue of polygamy, the church has kind of really been trying to align themselves with the rest of America.
Right.
I think that has something to, you know, I think that's part of the reason why Mormons tend to be so patriotic. I think there's been this real
right.
desire for, you know, of the Mormon Church, of people within the Mormon Church to try to fit in and to try
right.
to present themselves as a, you know, authentic, like real bona fide religion.
Right.
You know, I think that especially it's interesting because I was on my mission in Texas where most of the people there were very conservative Southern Baptist.
Right.
You know, and almost every single one of them looked at the Mormon Church as being this satanic cult.
Uh-huh.
And one of our biggest hurdles that we were trying to jump was to try to present the Mormon Church as a viable religion. You know, even if they didn't totally agree with us, we still wanted to say, hey, you know, we're just like you, we're a Christian, believe it or not,
right.
you know, I swear.
Right.
You know, so we do believe in God, we're not devil worshippers, you know, so there was this real
right.
push to kind of befriend the enemy in a way, you know,
right.
befriend
right.
the other religions. And I
right.
definitely, there have been some PR moves that the church from the very top have been making to kind of fit in, you know, with mainstream Christianity. And I think that's true. I think the fight of gay marriage is part of that, especially since they have the whole past with polygamy and that kind of alternate
right.
in terms of marriage.
You
know, they really want to prove to everybody that they're monogamous, that they're
right.
Traditional.
No, I agree. I agree.
Yeah.
That it was a little, a wedge, not a wedge, a shoehorn for them to get in there.
Exactly.
We only
yeah,
have,
exactly.
we only have like 90 seconds.
Okay.
I told you this would be the fastest 30 minutes of your life.
Boy, you were right. It was fast.
It does. I mean, every time I do the show once a week, and every time I say the same thing. How is your relationship with your family right now?
Actually, it's really wonderful. You know, we still, you know, we'll always have that kind of those issues that we don't see eye to eye on. But my father is actually a Mormon bishop again for the second time, and we get along really well. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of conflict between the two of us. You know, when I visit them in Utah, we'll go jogging together or motorcycle ride. Or I'm actually meeting my family at Disneyland next month, so that'll be fun. But it's good.
That should
We've
be
been a through
problem.
A lot.
Oh, you know, like the Kardashians.
Oh, yeah?
Well, think about it. I mean, you have, like, so much in common, but not, you know?
Yeah,
you
know,
you have the thing over your, you have this elephant, like, running around with you, and
it's
really
that's true.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fascinating. My family has a different, I'm not going to talk about my family too much, but we have a little different take. I have a very large family, very, very large, like a kind of as big as, probably bigger than your family. And we have a bunch of, we have like 9 openly gay people right now in our family of different ages. I know. So it's caused an entirely different dynamic. And I hope to God that you can experience what I experienced, because it's even funnier and more amazing. But listen, our time is rapidly approaching the end, and I'm really excited to hear your story. It's been amazing. I love your book. It's GayMormonStory.com is where you can buy the book. I'll do that one more time. GayMormonStory.com. I'm very good at plugging. And this, for those people who missed this, the interview will be available on our website for several years, actually, for download and replay. So I'm going to send Joe the link. And also, if you go on blogtalkradio.com/StonewallLive with three L's, you will find this in our archives with Joe Dallin, author of Perfect, The Journey of a Gay Mormon. Thank you, Joe, and aloha.
Thank you, Nate. It was a pleasure. Aloha to you.
Good night.
Good night.